When you got the glow, you fear no one. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Not too long ago, a listener reached out on the Kung Fu Pizza Party Instagram and asked, "Hey, have you ever done a review of The Last Dragon, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon?" And I said, "I sure would like to." And now we're here. And that's just how easy it is to convince me to do episodes that you all want to hear. Just go to Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party, slide into the show's DMs, and say, "Hey, how about this movie?" And there's a good chance I'll go, "All right, sure, I'll figure that out." Plus, this is one of those movies where I had always seen bits and pieces of it, but I had never seen it from start to finish. So I was definitely, I was interested in watching this one because I know it is a cult classic through and through. And I would... basically looking for an excuse to go ahead and watch it and do the review for you all here. And this is definitely my cover story for the fact that this is now 2 weeks in a row where I'm reviewing a movie with vanity in it. I'm not a weirdo. I'm doing what you all want. I'm not obsessed with vanity. I promise. I'm just doing what you all want to hear. You're the weirdos, not me. I do promise that next week there will not be a review of Action Jackson. Sadly, I wish. Someday. Definitely get to it at some point, but I'll space out the vanity a little bit more next time, folks. Now, as I said, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon is a cult classic through and through. So if you like B-movies, if you like cult classic films, it's definitely one that you need to go check out at some point. It sits in a pretty interesting place in martial art media, B-film history, coming out in 1985. It's certainly post-blaxploitation, though the movie does use a lot of tropes and storyline beats. It's made by African-Americans. It's starring predominantly African-American cast set in a 1980s urban New York City. It's post-blaxploitation while also being essentially the end of the Bruceploitation era. By 1985, Chuck Norris is firing on all cylinders. And over in Hong Kong, Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, Yuen Biao, Cynthia Rothrock, Michelle Yeoh are all starting to put out all of their classics and bangers. So although still to this day, don't get me wrong, Bruce Lee is still a major influence, and you still even see some post-Bruceploitation films like Enter the Fat Dragon with Donnie Yen, or even aspects of Kill Bill as well, this is really the ending point of people trying to capitalize off of the popularity of Bruce Lee because of his death. Now, the movie is typically just referred to as The Last Dragon, but it is fully Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, because everybody gets into the music industry to start making kung fu movies. We're all still waiting on Taylor Swift to begin her kung fu era. I mean, you laugh, you may be chuckling at that, but let's not forget that even Elvis did karate. Like, even Elvis was a martial artist at some point. Boy, I wish he would have wrote something down so that way I could do Elvis katas with all of his fun poses. Anyway, in case you may not be familiar with the name Barry Gordy, he is the founder of Motown Records, the record label that was responsible for racial integration of pop music, bringing us artists like the Jackson 5, the Supremes, the Temptations, Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder. Motown Records eventually did develop a film and television division that was responsible for things like The Wiz with Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, or the Jackson 5 animated series. But even knowing that at one point they did get into making film and television, The Last Dragon still sticks out a bit like a sore thumb in their filmography, in their catalog. And it sticks out enough that it would make somebody who's only seen bits and pieces of it, like myself, or somebody just hearing about this movie maybe for the first time listening to this episode, it gives you enough of an indication to think, is this a musical? Is this like a martial art movie musical? It's not, sadly. It is not a martial art movie musical. Music does play a pretty important role in the story, but it's not musical. It's not a musical, but it does have a lot of original music worked into the storyline. Also, music video culture is a big part of the storyline as well. Tell me you're an 80s movie without telling me you're an 80s movie. Music videos play an important role in the story. I guess that would make it an 80s movie, that's for sure. Berry Gordy also oversaw the producing of the official soundtrack to The Last Dragon, which does feature songs by Stevie Wonder and Vanity as well, who started out as a singer with a group in Motown. This movie is also known for featuring the DeBarge song Rhythm of the Night. It's gonna be the rhythm of the night. Ooh-wah, ooh-wah, ooh-wah. I'm sorry you have to occasionally put up with me singing on this show. It's a great song. It's a great song, but when I used to work in retail, I had to listen to that song like 3 times a day. So it doesn't really hit as much as it probably could, just because I was inundated with it at work. But the music is very good in this movie. It can get a little cheesy at times, but just to try and fit with the overall theme of the movie, but it's still a good soundtrack. Now, earlier I said, sorry, everybody, it's not a martial art musical. Some of you may be upset about that. The good news is I actually have found a certified martial art musical that sounds bonkers. It sounds bananas, and I am so ready to watch it. But here's the thing, folks. I'm already at 2 episodes a week, and even with planning out 2 episodes a week, I'm already starting to pencil in episodes for 2027. It is June, and I am already thinking about episodes for 2027. Either we're just going to all have to learn to be patient, or I'm going to have to figure out a way to start doing 3 episodes a week. And I know the idea of me doing 3 episodes a week, though it may be exhausting to me, for you all, you're turning into Bill Hader from that SNL sketch. Oh no, how terrible. Oh no, I have to listen to more Kung Fu Pizza Party. Oh no, I hope Brandon doesn't start a Patreon soon for the show. Pause for dramatic effect. Anyway, back to The Last Dragon. Let's get into the cast and the plot now. So this movie stars Taymak. He is a lifelong stuntman and television actor. He's done a lot of roles and a lot of different shows. This is his big claim to fame, being in The Last Dragon as Bruce Leroy. I told you it was a Bruceploitation film. His name is Bruce Leroy, and there's more Bruce Lee references beyond that. Bruce Leroy is a very accomplished martial artist, and so is Taymak. It shows in this movie. Bruce Leroy is a very accomplished martial artist. He has gotten so far into his training that he is on the verge of being able to access the glow, which is a mystical ability that is a once in a generation. Only one person every generation is able to tap into the glow, which gives you this ability to have heightened reflexes and strength and speed, and I guess you turn into Deathstroke a little bit because you can also like see your opponent's moves before they even throw them. And the last person to be able to access the glow was, you guessed it, Bruce Lee. I told you, it's a Bruceploitation film through and through. Pause. There are people who have devoted their entire life to the martial arts, have hit the rank of grandmaster, like, which takes real grandmasters take like decades to get to that point. 10 degrees of black belt and plus more sometimes in order to hit that rank. And they've never accessed the glow. Those losers. Losers. What a waste of time. I'm kidding. It's a bit. Anyway, so the main plot of this movie is Bruce Leroy trying to finish his training to access the glow, which this is the most Scientology thing I've ever heard of in a kung fu movie. The hero, the protagonist, having to go learn some secret kata or special move thing like that. Like, yeah, that comes up aplenty, but you have ascended so far into your training that you're able to access superpowers is some Scientology Dragon Ball Z thing for sure. So the main plot, as I said, for this movie is Bruce Leroy is going to go find this very specific master to finish his training so he can access the glow. That's the main plot. There's about six more subplots to this movie. It gets all very entangled with all these different storylines that, to its credit, this movie does a really good job of tying it all together by the end. Like, there's no loose ends. Great job, movie. Though I will say there were parts in this movie that made me think, how much coke did they go through to make this movie? Like, it gets weird at points. So since I've mentioned her a couple times already, let's talk about Vanity. So Vanity is a host of a local music video show. It's kind of like one part MTV, one part Soul Train. Kind of this like mixing of the two together. You got music videos, you got people coming on to play live or to, you know, show off some cool hip new dance trend that's going on. There's a lot of things going on there. Very popular show in this New York City area where this movie is taking place. She is eventually confronted by the antagonist of the movie, who is, you guessed it, a mediocre rich white dude. His whole thing is he gets rich off of the backs of other people's success. Super relatable, let me say. Super relatable villain for this time era, for the time that we are in right now. But so like the guy who's currently like his security dude, he was managing him as a boxer for a while. The reason why he's harassing Vanity now is because his girlfriend wants to become a pop star. So he wants Vanity to run her music video. The problem is though, Vanity is very straightforward. Like, yeah, we don't highlight the kind of music that she does. They do more of like R&B style music on the on her television program. And the girlfriend, she's kind of this like cross between Madonna and Cyndi Lauper. Again, tell me you're an 80s movie without telling me you're an 80s movie. But being the mediocre rich white guy that he is, he will not take no for an answer, which eventually leads to a scene where she is being attacked by some of this guy's like cronies, his goons, and Bruce Leroy just happens to be around and saves her. This then leads Vanity to say, hey, I would like to hire you as my security. And he's like, I got other things to do. And she's like, come on, be my security. And yeah, this eventually leads to a music video scene where they are watching Bruce Lee fight from different movies. and also they fall in love. That's part of the big, yeah, that they're the, she's the love interest in this movie. Definitely a different role from Never Too Young to Die, where she's the love interest, but more of a, like, independent character of herself. Whereas this, she's definitely more of, like, the damsel in distress style character. But they do fall in love. They do fall for each other, much to the chagrin of Bruce Leroy's younger brother. This is yet another storyline going on. So Vanity's music video show is having this contest where you get to, like, spend a day with her kind of thing. And Bruce Leroy's younger brother, who's gotta be, like, at most 14, somewhere between, like, 12 to 14 years old, he is horny AF for Vanity. Aren't we all? But he's 14, like 14 at most, and just, like, the things that he says to his brother about Vanity and how Bruce Leroy has no idea how to please a woman and he knows how to make a woman happy. It's just like in Never Too Young to Die, the 80s be the 80s. Like, I get it. Teenage boys will say highly inappropriate things. I was a teenage boy saying highly inappropriate things, but it was just some of the things that are said. I'm just like, oh my gosh, somebody wrote this dialogue and nobody batted an eye about it, of a 14-year-old saying very inappropriate things about a grown-ass woman. Like, oh my gosh. There's also another factor at play here for why Bruce Leroy's brother, younger brother, significantly younger brother, is trying to, like, school him on picking up girls and relating to women. So in the context of 1985, when this movie comes out, Bruce Leroy is presented as this, like, socially awkward individual, and it's because he has just devoted his whole life to basically becoming Bruce Lee. That's, like, his whole purpose in life. And so because of that, he's not as familiar with, like, social cues and, like, what is, you know, common terminology for the times and how to, like, relate to certain people. And he even misses, like, some hints that Vanity is dropping early on about, you know, her being into him, the whole bit, and which is fine. From a 2026 standpoint, it does read like he is on the spectrum. I don't think, which is fine, obviously, absolutely fine that it's coming off that way. It, a lot of what's going on here does seem to kind of lean that way. I just don't think that was the intention in the writing of the character in back in 85 when this movie came out. But either A, we just thought martial arts were just absolute dweebs back then, or B, this just shows, like, how people on the spectrum have at times been really misunderstood, that there is something more to the hyper-focus, hyper-fixation, and the missing out of... there's more to what is going on beneath the surface than just being quirky character traits that we can use for a movie. I am not on the spectrum, I will say that. So if I am stepping out of line here, I do apologize. I would love to hear from somebody who maybe is autistic or somewhere on the spectrum, after having watched this movie, what they would think of Bruce Leroy's character and my, like, a brief synopsis of some of his traits, if I'm accurate in saying all this. But yeah, I found that to be very interesting, just kind of looking at that through a lens of when we were making movies differently. As I said, this movie does do a good job of tying up all the loose ends, all the different storylines, but I will say this, the final showdown is not between Bruce Leroy and the mediocre rich white dude, because of course it wouldn't be. He's a mediocre rich white dude. He does get his comeuppance, don't get me wrong, but he's a mediocre rich white dude. Nobody wants to see Bruce Leroy easily beat up that guy. We need a bigger bad, and Oh my gosh, do we have it? Because Bruce Leroy is not the only one who's on the verge of being able to access the glow. No, there is another that he is racing against, because this is a once in a generation thing, and he is racing up against Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. I now have to go the rest of my life knowing that I will never be as cool as Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. I'm a ninja coach. I will never be able to reach the ranks of Shogun of Harlem. Like, this isn't even a bit, y'all. He is the coolest villain I have ever seen in a movie. Oh my gosh, Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. It helps. His look is awesome. He has an awesome fit. He does have like the Road Warriors red football pad kind of thing going on. He's got this crew that finishes his sentences for him. He's cool. And a big part of the story is the fact that he keeps trying to challenge Bruce Leroy for a fight, to like prove he's better, prove that he should be the one to get the glow. Bruce Leroy keeps skirting him, keeps avoiding confrontation. He's that kind of a martial artist who's like, you know, I only use my powers for good kind of thing, and you're a dick, so I'm not gonna use my powers just to like beat you up for no reason. But eventually he does have to fight Shonuff in a battle to finally access the glow, because Shonuff starts being able to get the glow a little bit. He's such a good character. He's such a fun character. The last dragon, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, is a great time. You gotta go check this movie out. Would I watch it again? Absolutely. It deserves all the cult classic love that this movie does get. And although it is, as I said, technically a cult classic film, it did do well for itself in the box office. It had an estimated budget of about $10 million, and it grossed $33 million at the box office. So it did well for itself, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it is worth all the hype. Would I buy a physical media copy of The Last Dragon? And I would say yes. Because one of the posters for this movie is awesome. I love the poster. I'll make sure it's the one that I'm posting on social media, so that way you can see it. It is so cool. Love it so much. But not only do I really like the poster, this is one of those movies that bounces around streaming. So when I watched it, which was a little bit back now, I watched it on Tubi, Roku channel, one of those, one of the free streaming. Recently I checked, it was on Hulu. And then when I pulled it up, it was on Prime Video. So like, it bounces around, and when a movie does that, that tells me that it is a good indication that I should just have that one on hand, because I might want to watch it, and it is behind a paywall that I don't have access to. Or, you know, movies kind of bounce around and eventually are only available to rent or buy anyway. So it's like, I might as well get this, buy it once and just have it at this point. I know streaming at one point in time, streaming can be super convenient, especially when a movie like basically takes up a residency on Tubi, Plex, Pluto TV, Roku channel, these free streaming. But I think that when it comes to these films that bounce all over the place, if you like it, just get it. Just pick up a copy. It'll make it so much easier if you want to go back and watch it. Thanks for listening to today's episode. And like I said back at the beginning, if there's a movie you're interested in, let me know. I will do my best to try and get to it at some point, and hopefully I won't actually have to do 3 episodes a week. Oh no, how terrible. You don't seem like you're upset. You can also follow the show on Letterboxd at Kung Fu Pizza, PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. Check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, A Place for Faith and Pop Culture. Check out the other shows here on the Andazal Podcast Network, like Page and Pixel, Systematic Ecology, Friday Night Frights, and my sister show, My Seminary Life. Make sure you rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts, and pass this episode along to a friend. And thank you to the Some Joyful Noise listeners for tuning in for today's episode. I figured since we were doing a little bit of music history, y'all might appreciate that. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.